Okay, so in Parshas Tezria, come, guys, come. In Parshas Tezria, a couple of Rashis in Tezria. Most of the Rashis in Tezria are very technical about Nigaim and different types of Nigaim, so we're not going to try to drill into those Rashis. We'll just see some of the more general Rashis. So the first Rashi is a fascinating one. Rashi discusses the sequencing between Shemini and Tezria. Shemini, the last section of Shemini, talked about the animals that you can eat, animals that you can't eat, Zosachai Shetachlu, Zosachai Shetachelu. And then Parshat Tezria talks about, even though it ultimately segues into Mitzara, but the beginning of the Parsha is Isha Ki Tezria, V'yolda Zachar V'tamu Shavayim Kenidasa. So why is it sequenced that way? So the very famous Rashi says, Amar Rav Simlai, Rav Simlai is best known, by the way, because he has the drasha in Makos that there are Tariag Mitzvos. How do you know there are Tariag Mitzvos? Anyone know? Torah Tzivon Lanu Moshe, Torah is Begumatria 611. And we know that Hashem spoke two mitzvahs to us, Anochi and Lo Yelecha Mipei HaGevura Shemanum. So if you take Torah, 611, and the two that Hashem told us directly, Moshe taught us Torah, 611. Hashem taught us too, 613. That's the only time Chazal say 613. We think 613 is a magic number. That's the only place in Chazal, Makos Chav Dalet, where 613 is mentioned. So that's Rev Simlai. So this is also Rev Simlai. Darish Rev Simlai. Kishem she yitzirasa, Rashi quotes the Medrash, shel adam achra kol behema chayiv ha'of b'masa bereshis, kach taraso nisparsha achra taras behema chayiv ha'of. Just like in bereshis, man's creation is after animal's creation, it comes last. Similarly, the halachos of man, namely the birth of man, the mitzara, the halachos of a person becomes tameh, they're also subsequent to behemos. Now, what does Rav Simlai mean? What does Rashi mean? It's just stylistic. We want to keep the styles intact. Just like in Sefer Bereishis, man is subsequent to animals. Similarly, in Shemos, man is subsequent to animals. Or is there a deeper meaning by the fact that Sefer Vayikra is sequenced the same way that Bereishis is sequenced? First animals, and then man. So for that, you have to understand the broader relationship between Sefer Vayikra and Sefer Bereishis. Sefer Bereishis is about the creation of the material world, of the physical world. But this physical world, even though it seems very durable, it wouldn't survive if there weren't a spirit underneath it. This is just material. Material comes and goes. What's preventing this book from evaporating? So we call it physics, and that's what science probes, but what's underneath physics? Not the what, but the why. And where is it? That's called the spiritual substrate of this world. And a part of the spiritual substrate is probed by Kabbalah. But without thinking about Kabbalah, if Hashem wouldn't be in this world, the world wouldn't sustain. If Hashem pulled his presence out and his sustaining presence from this world, physics would collapse. Physics isn't a system. Physics is an interface that Hashem created, set of laws. But Hashem is sustaining all those laws. So if Hashem were to pull his presence out, Sabaratius wasn't complete until Shemos / Vayikra. This is the end of Vayikra. Vayikra is the end of Shemos. Shemos is historically when Hashem descends into the Mishkan. And then Vayikra are the laws to maintain Hashem's presence in the Mishkan. So Vayikra are the Taras Kohanim, the laws the Kohanim must keep to preserve Hashem's spirit from descending, to preserve it in this world, which is described in the end of Shemos, to sustain the world. So patterning Sefer Vayikra after Sefer Bereishis reminds us that Sefer Vayikra, what I would call Shemos and Vayikra, Shemos is the history of Hashem's descent, Vayikra are the laws to keep Hashem's presence in our community in the Beis HaMikdash, paralleling it to Sefer Bereishis reminds us that Sefer Bereishis is really an incomplete book until Shemos and Vayikra come, which of course is a famous Rashi, Yom HaShishi, even though to the naked eye it looks like the world was created in 6 days, it was suspended until the sixth day of Sivan, Yom HaShishi, not the sixth day of creation, because if there wouldn't be a sixth day of Sivan, HaShishi, then the world would collapse because Hashem's presence wouldn't be in this world. So part of it is structural and stylistic to juxtapose and to parallel Shemos and Vayikra to Bereishis. The same order in Bereishis, animals and men, follows through in Shemos and Vayikra, or not Shemos, but Vayikra, which are the laws of man that come after the laws of animal, and that's why that very iconic opening to Shemini, Uvayibahi Bayom HaShemini. So we know that Shemini is the eighth day of Miluim, but it's the eighth day after the 7 days of creation. Hashem created the world in 7 days in Bereishis. Now it's the next stage, Yom HaShemini, so that that world could be sustained and preserved and stabilized. Hashem's presence has to come into our world. So part of it is that message, that Shemos and Vayikra has to be read as Bereishis part 2, chapter 2, second part of Bereishis, without which Bereishis 1 would fall apart. But part of it is what's happening in Vayikra, and for this you have to dig a little bit into Parshas Tezria. In Parshas Tezria and Mitzara, a very interesting narrative, very interesting saga. Someone commits some sin. Obviously, nothing is arbitrary. It's not just getting skin disease arbitrarily. For whatever reason, the Torah doesn't tell us what that sin is. We'll talk about that some other time. Why doesn't the Torah just telegraph the reason this person received tzaras is because he or she spoke lashon hara or arrogant? It's all coded for whatever reason, not for now. And that person has to leave the place they are. Badad yeshev michutz l'machne moshavo. What does that sound like? A person sins and they have to leave. What story does that sound like?
In Miklat.
In Miklat. But Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon sinned and had to leave Gan Eden. He was expelled from Gan Eden. Badad yeshev michutz l'machne moshavo. So the story in Tazria is very similar to the story in Bereishis. There's just one difference. Now that we're in Vayikra and Shmos, Shmos and Vayikra, now there's something called Tshuva, and you can come back. Adam never comes back. He's just expelled from Gan Eden. Here, V'huva ala Kohen, we have a Kohen, literally V'huva, he goes back. After leaving, he goes back ala Kohen. And now there's a retrieval mechanism. And now that Hashem has created free will and Tshuva, Sefer Bereishis is happening, but in a very different way. It's not absolute, and it's not severed. Now there's a return mechanism. There's a return ticket. V'huva ala Kohen, Korbanos, and Kohanim, and Tshuva, and Avodas Hashem. So the need to juxtapose what's happening in Tazria to Sefer Bereishis and to sequence it the same way Bereishis is being sequenced is twofold. First of all, just in general, forget Parshas Tazria. You should read all of Shmos and Vayikra as a complement to Bereishis. Because without Shmos and Vayikra, Bereishis wouldn't survive. But number two, specifically, in the micro sense, let me say it even a little bit different. In Bereishis, why is man after animal? Because man is superior to animal. Why is man superior to animal? Because of everything Hashem endowed him with. All the gifts of Tzelem Elokim that animals don't have. In Vayikra, man is after animal because he's superior to animal. Why? Because he has free will to perform tshuva. Not the gifts Hashem gave him, but because he can make decisions to bring a korban, to be mechaper on his sins, to embrace HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that divinely endowed superiority in Bereishis is now becoming a human power superiority in Vayikra because people make decisions that animals can't make. Animals can't make decisions. They're either tameh or tar. They're treif or not treif. They can't make decisions. The human beings in Tazria Mesara make decisions. So it's not just a parallel of the two Sfarim, but to show that now there is free will, there's a mechanism for return, and that's what lends human beings the superiority that makes them less, the apogee, the pinnacle, the top, as we build up to the crescendo of creation. Okay? It's a very fascinating Rashi. You read it very quickly. Who cares? Why do we want the style of Vayikra to be similar to the style of Bereishis? Because we want to read them together, and we want to also contrast between Bereishis and Vayikra. Okay? Now, a really, really subtle Rashi. It's a very subtle point. The first section of Tazria, as I said before, doesn't describe Tzaras. It describes a woman who gives birth, and she's Tamei for a certain amount of time. Yet the Torah never calls her Tamei. Actually, it says it once, but we'll put that on the side right now. When the Torah describes her process of being tar, v'kivolof ne'ashem, v'chiper aleha, v'tara mimkor domeha. She becomes tar from the blood, because when a woman gives birth, obviously there's a lot of blood. V'tara mimkor domeha. So what is zos tara seyoledes lazachar olan kiva? So Rashi says, v'tara, michlal, you can infer that if she's tar, when she brings her korbanos after the period, michlal she'adkan kuya temeh. And until now she's called a tameh. Like, what is Rashi telling us? So if you just read the parsha a little bit, you find that with one exception, the Torah never calls a woman who gives birth tameh. It just tells us that she should be mitayer herself. So Rashi says, by the way, since the Torah is telling us she should be mitayer herself, I can infer, michlal lav atashameh, michlal atashameh lav, that she was tameh. Why? Why doesn't the Torah call her tameh? The answer is as follows, okay? It's a very, very subtle point. Tumah is not a moral stain. If someone's tummy, it doesn't make them a horrible person. In fact, it may make them a big righteous person, because they may be tummy because they're part of the Chevra Kadisha. They may have buried a mace mitzvah. They may be Moshe Rabbeinu carrying Atzmos Yosef, as the Gemara says, in Nazi, who was tummy most of the 40 years in the desert, because he was involved in a huge mitzvah. But at some point, you've come into contact with something that has to be separated from the world of Kedusha. It's a no-fault issue. We don't blame you, but you can't continue your life in the Mishkan because we have to create a separation between two worlds. The most obvious is, of course, when you come into contact with death. It could be a dead body. It could be a dead carcass. It could be when a woman every month has her nidus, which means that that potential for life, right, hasn't been utilized, right? Nidus is when you haven't given, when you haven't, become pregnant. Again, it's no fault. No, there's nothing wrong. You're not a Russia. That's why using one of the words that don't easily translate to English, people use the word impure. It's a horrible word. Because in English, impure means you're unholy, you did something horrible, there's something wrong with you. Just be careful. I never use that word to describe tuma. In English, just use the word tuma. Because it's really, it carries pejorative connotations. But you've come into contact with something. Even Baal Keri, when a person is a Baal Keri, like, what's wrong with being a Baal Keri? You have a mitzvah to live a normal marital life with your wife. Okay, because not every issue of Keri, not every time that a person has Keri, is it in the context of Benish L'Ishto. Sometimes it happens Mikrei Laila. So even when it is in the context of Ishto, there's a tumah. So at every moment, you're coming into contact with something that has to be separated from the world of Kedusha. When a woman gives birth, she's a Shutta for the Kodesh Baruch Hu. You bring life into this world. It's an experience that no one here will ever taste. No one will ever know what it means to be that closely aligned with Hashem, that you're a partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu for 9 months in creating a child. It's an amazing concept. I can only look at it as an outsider. And obviously speaking to my wife and my daughters and imagining and hearing from them, it's the spiritual high of your life. There's nothing tameh about it. Even in the light way that we define tumah, not as impure, but it's coming into contact with something that doesn't belong in the Beis HaMikdash. And in fact, a lot of Mefarshim say the reason she is tameh halachically is not because she's come into contact with something that has to be separated from the mikdash, because she wants to mark the moment and she wants to absorb what happened. And if life continues normally, then she can't. So that's a deeper conversation, but it's not incidental that this is the one person who's tameh that the Torah doesn't use the word tumah. Now, of course, halachically, she's tameh. She has to keep the laws of tumah. But the way the Torah tells us that halachically she has to keep the laws of tumah is by saying v'tahara, is by discussing the back end when she escapes from that halachic status, never calling her tumah. Again, the part of there is one place where she's called tumah, v'tama shuraim kinidosa, but it's not heightened, it's not stressed in the parsha. All the other tumos, the Torah says very often, tamehu, 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 both the animals in Shmini and the people in the end of Mitzara, v'zava, nezava. Here, the Torah never calls it. Okay, one more Rashi, third Rashi, very fascinating Rashi. Okay, Torah says, listen to this: Uviyom Hera'os Bo, the day that the Kohen sees the Mitzara, Basar Chai, a certain type of a flesh irregularity, whatever the Tzaras is, Yitma. Why does the Torah say Uviyom Hera'os Bo, the day? So Rashi quotes the Medrash Halach, it's also a Gemara, that on that day, the Kohen has to consider the tzaras and pronounce tumah if it meets the standards. Sounds like there are certain days you don't. Yesh yamim, Rashi says, okay, that you don't see the nega. Let me read the Rashi to you. Yesh yom shetarobo. The yesh yom sheinatarobo. There are days you can process tzaras, and in days the person is exempt from being tzaras. Anyone know who are the two people who are exempt from being tzaras? A chassan during the Sheva Brachas. Let's say a chassan has tzaras. He's tahar, even if it meets all the standards of tzaras. Tzaras mahadrin min mahadrin is tahar. Or during yamtif. If you have tzaras on yamtif, the coin is closed. The tzaras stand is closed for yamtif. You can have the worst tzaras, you're not. Therefore, biyom herosah. Normally, you pronounce tumas tzaras. But there are days you don't pronounce tumas tzaras. A chassan, 7 days, or rega. Okay, I'm closing Rashi now. That's a Gemara. It's a lacha. Why? Why are these the two people that are exempt from tzaras? Obviously, because there's a need. We want them to celebrate either the regel or the chasen. But conceptually, how can a Kodesh Baruch Hu let people off the hook for their grievous sin? Let's assume it's lashon hara, that tzaras is responsible. What chasen doesn't need a kapara? On Yom Tov, you don't need a kapara. Let's say you spoke horrible lashon hara all Erev Pesach. And all of a sudden you broke out with tzaras the night of Pesach. Oh, you're off. What about all the kapara that you need? Evidently, there's a different way to achieve kapara. When you speak lashon hara, you fall into a very small, petty, childish, selfish place. You have your needs, and you want to slander the other person, and you want to get ahead by slandering the other person. No one just tells slander for no reason. Either you want that person's reputation to suffer, or you want to be popular. Everyone likes some good gossip. Everyone likes some good you know, Shabbos afternoon, Shabbos morning, second Shabbos meal talk, shalom talk, who's doing what to whom, and what who did what, and what that person's for. It's one of the most petty, low, small-minded, selfish acts you can do. Eleanor Roosevelt supposedly once said, I don't know if it's true, she was the president of one of the great, wife of one of the great American presidents, small minds speak about people. Average minds speak about events. Large minds speak about ideas. So when you speak about people, even if it's not gossip, like so much of media today is about people, right? Reality shows. It used to be that media was at least some art, not high art, but art. Let's create a show about something. Let's show a movie about something. Let's describe whatever. Again, it's very shallow ideas, but nonetheless, there's some things you're coming to watch about. Today, you're just watching people's lives. It's very voyeuristic. You just want to see their lives and talk about their lives and their activities. Very, very small and low and selfish and petty. And I want to talk. That's very, it's very manipulative almost, even though you're not aware of it. They're talking about you to gain, using you as an object to gain popularity, to gain interest, to put you down. The expectation is that there are two times a year when a person feels such selflessness and such purity that they can rise above that infantilism and rise above that pettiness without tsaras, without the suffering of tsaras. When all of Am Yisrael is together in Yerushalayim, and it's the regal, and you're thinking about Jewish history, and Yetzias Mitzrayim and Har Sinai, hopefully that elevates you into a mind space as you can somehow deal with your pettiness and get past it and say, you know what a fool I was. What a child I was. I told slander about that person. I was jealous about that person. I'm part of something so much larger. Jewish history, Jewish peoplehood, Yerushalayim. Here I am. He's able to look back at the gossip and the slander he told a few days ago and overcome it without having to suffer tsaras. When a person hopefully marries and you say, you know what, I'm going to spend my life not serving my own needs, but serving other people's needs. My wife, my children, my grandchildren, starting a family. I'm part of something larger. Right? Marriage is not privilege. Marriage is responsibility, obligation. It also brings privileges. A lot of times people come over to me and they say, Rebbe, you know, I want to get married, but I don't want to have children, whatever. So those are two types of questions. One question is, you know, when to have children. That right, not for now. You're still too young for that. But being married means responsibility. And if you're not ready to take responsibility, then you're not ready to be married. Marriage isn't just privileges. Marriage is the two. And generally in life, if you have privilege of that responsibility, it's a very selfish moment. You always want to couple responsibility and obligation with privilege. So these are two people that are not exempt from tsaras. Again, halachically they're exempt, but they're involved in larger moments, and not just of commitment to something larger, but also joy. When you feel joy, hopefully you don't feel pettiness. Part of joy is and happiness is it makes you feel more generous. That's what you want if you want to give. It makes you step out of yourself, because when you're happy about something, you want to share it with someone. So when you share your joy and happiness with someone, hopefully it makes you more connected to other people beyond yourself. People that get depressed than within themselves, live very selfish lives. Selfishness creates depression. Depression creates selfishness. It becomes a cycle. Whereas when you're happy, what's the first thing you do when you go to a good restaurant? You want to share it with someone. You call, I see a good movie, heard a good sports thing. You want to share it, because when you have joy, you want to feel that you can share the joy in your heart with other people. So the fact that the chassan and the person on the yontif are excused is not just that we'll give them a heter. It's because we expect that those experiences can purge them of their pettiness and can create a similar effect to tsaras. Okay? So these are three very interesting rashis. The first rashi is the sequencing of man after animal. Kashem sheitzirasokotem kachtarasa mukharas. Just like he's last to be created, he's last to be described, A, stylistically, to compare the two svarim, but also to contrast the two svarim, that now man is great, not just because Hashem endowed him with divine traits, because he's utilizing those traits for free will at its height for tshuva, to make a return to the Beis HaMikdash. Number two, the Torah avoids calling the woman tame. That word, even though the word tame never means impure morally and spiritually, because you could be doing a big mitzvah and you still are halachically impure, but even that moniker, that concept isn't applied to a woman. We know she's tame because the Torah says on her last day, the Torah recorded them now. And finally, the chassan and person on the yom tov are excused from tsaras because those two experiences simulate what tsaras is supposed to create. And therefore, he doesn't have to undergo the suffering of tsaras. Okay? Have a good day, everyone. Tomorrow's the last shiur. So everyone come for a last shiur on Haggadah tomorrow. Okay?